Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Monday, April 26th, 2010. I'm Sam Minter. I have Yvonne Bo with me. Hello, Yvonne.
Yep. Hello. I was just, you know, as we're about to go in the air, I go and, like, you know, people post sometimes some pictures on Facebook that I'm just like, gosh, man, I mean, do you really want to post these? I'm like, you know, I just think, you know, I don't know. A pajama party of some friend of mine and some other, like, not very women not wearing a lot of much clothes is, I don't know if it qualifies into one of those pictures you really want to post on the internet.
Okay.
You know, I'm like, okay, well, and I'm like, I didn't get invited to this party. I'm like, you know, oh, well, you know, plus I can't get invited to those parties anymore. I'm married.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I don't want to go off into a big tangent on this, but I think this is all part of the sort of changing normal, you know, in terms of what's private and what's not. Because, you know, I remember going to a thing at Amy's school a couple years ago where they had the guy who was like the computer guy at the school talk about a little bit about, you know, letting teenagers on social networks and posting things they'll regret and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, look, you know, you're absolutely right in one sense, in that, you know, these kids are going to be posting stuff that if you looked at them through the eyes of, you know, the people who are in top positions at various companies today who saw this stuff, they'd be like, oh my God, I'm not going to hire this person. But if you wait, you know, by the time the kids,
probably even you and me, I mean, we would be like, I mean,
probably,
you know,
even you and me who have been in hiring positions, but definitely if you wait until the generation that is now teenagers, until they are in positions of authority and doing hiring and all this kind of stuff, it's going to be more like, you mean you didn't post naked pictures on Facebook? What's wrong with you?
Yeah, I know. Pretty much, yes.
So. You know, or at least drunken party pictures. I mean, come on.
Oh, well, those I've posted. There's pictures of me drunken parties already. I mean, for crying out loud. I mean, we're going to go off on that. I mean, forget about it. I mean, that's already done.
It's just, you know, this, yes, our parents or, you know, would be like, I can't believe you're posting that where people can see it. But that's just not going to be the case in another generation.
You know? Well, now I will say that I have almost every damn privacy restriction turned on Facebook. Basically, you just can't. If you search me on Google, my Facebook will not come back. And, you know, and I only have everything to be shown only to people who I am actually friends with. Okay. You know, I did do that. But, you know, still anyway.
I'm the exact opposite. I'm like, share whatever the hell you want, you know? And like, I mean, most of the stuff that I post, I'm posting on the public internet anyway, without any restrictions whatsoever, and people can find it, and I'm like...
Well, you've always done that. I've always been the opposite.
I know. I didn't even have this on my list today, but of course, Facebook made their changes this week as well that exposed a lot more information to a lot more people, unless you go through a fairly convoluted series of steps in order to opt out of all that kind of stuff.
And did the change again? I mean, they did that change a couple of months back, I thought.
No. Well, what they've changed this time is it's part of their new effort to, like, put things like buttons all over the web. You know, and basically now the applications that you have on Facebook or that interact with you that, you know, or that you like, you know, whatever, now have access to a lot larger set of information from your profile.
Well, here's one thing
and also, even if you turn that off, your friends can still share your information in those places unless that you explicitly remove even more places. It's fairly complex. If you go to EFF's website, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, they have some posts that explain in detail what this is and how you can remove it and stuff like that. But there are a bunch of people, once again, sort of up in arms about what's Facebook doing here? What are they sharing? How do they surprise us with this kind of stuff? But at the same time, honestly, I'm hearing it seems like there's less of an uproar than last time, and I think Facebook is wearing people down.
Well, I think that I will say this, that I'm like trying to look through this right now because of what you just mentioned. I will say this, that because of that concern, I have almost refused to add any Facebook app. Okay.
Yeah, I've been very, very restrictive on almost all cases when, you know, I'd get an invite from somebody about something or other and
I'm like, no.
And then
no.
The little warning says, do you want to share your information with this app? And I'm like, no.
Fuck no. Fuck no. I'm like, fuck no. I'm like, I don't want any of these apps. I don't want any of them.
There's one or two that I have, and there are things that, you know, I've decided I wanted and I was okay with. But almost all the time when I get those things, I'm like, no.
I looked through and I am right. I did do this. I had a couple installed and I went and I got rid of them. Just got rid of them all. I'm just like, you know what? I don't want any of this stuff because most of them are just, no. No, don't like them. Just they're. I don't know. So anyway, all right. So we went off on the tangent. Anyway, even though we tried not to, we're very good at that. Anyway,
yeah, one more. Just as a point of information, if you look, it was a post on April 21st on EFF.org, and the title is "How to Opt Out of Facebook's Instant Personalization." If you're interested in more details on this, I will also add one more piece of feedback that we got from last week, which starts with, you seriously do not have to read this as feedback, but, so I'm going to read it anyway. And basically it was lol or LOL. I don't know. Do you say lol or do you say LOL? I've heard both.
I don't know. I've never said it out loud.
I know. I've never said it out loud either, but I've heard people say it out loud in both ways. Anyway, your break song, lol. I went back to 1258 just to hear it again. This was on the podcast. and then they also mentioned this was someone else.
I must admit, by the way, I also like your break song. I never said this before. The first time I heard it, I just cracked up laughing, and I was like, wow, this actually came out not too bad.
this was from someone who also had been to some of those mail communications policy things that I mentioned at my former financial employer, and the person says, I remember those email training classes. Ah, the good old days. Electronic communications policy. That's what they called it. Anyway, that's that. So our first actual topic that we were going to talk about that both of us agreed on was what's going on right now in Arizona with immigration. So can you give a summary of this? Because I've heard a few things here and there. I haven't done a deep dive.
Basically, they've passed a law in Arizona that demands that people be able to present evidence of their citizenship.
Yes.
And you know, they've done it in a way also, they say they're trying to train police forces in a way that they can enforce that, but the bottom line is that they want any resident to at demands of the police to be able to produce that evidence. And if they do not produce that evidence, Arizona claims to try to attempt to deport these people or take legal action in order to remove them from the state. I guess.
And so, you know,
does that mean that you could deport them to what, Nevada?
Well, and you know what, I've seen a little bit of a debate back and forth on this. And one of the things from the people who are in favor of this, one of the things they seem to continuously be missing, whether it's intentional or not, is, you know, if you are a bona fide 100% American citizen, you generally do not carry around proof of that fact on you at all times.
I know of very few bona fide American citizens that carry any evidence of the fact that they are citizens, okay, on a regular basis.
So and what this ends up being is if you look somewhat off or ethnic or, you know, in the case of Arizona, hey, you look like a Mexican.
Fuck you. Yeah, let's check you out.
You know, and then you could be a happy 100% American citizen, and they'll be like, ID and proof of citizenship, please, and you'll hand them your driver's license, and they'll be like, that's no proof of citizenship. You're going to jail, son. You know?
And, you know, and the one thing that I loved was how the governor, even though after they were told, she basically you know, got an attorney general who was a Republican explaining to her on the phone how this is so unconstitutional that there is no way that you should really sign this. You've got to be out of your mind, okay? Went ahead and did so. And basically the argument was something like, well, you know what? The people don't care about the Constitution. They want to protect their rights. And I'm like, what? So I'm like, it's just a little bit contradictory.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, you just can't stomp on the Constitution just because, you know, you have an issue that you have to deal with. And I'm, you know what? I'm sorry, I feel zero sympathy for the people from Arizona. I live in a state that we are flooded with immigration on a regular basis, and I think the Arizonans are a bunch of fucking racist assholes, okay, who just can't deal with a bunch of people speaking Spanish around them, okay? That's all it is, okay? And you know, they, in my opinion, they could go stick it.
So
okay?
if all these illegal immigrants would just speak English, everything would be okay.
You know what? I guarantee you that they're not complaining about a German, you know, I don't know, take any fucking country that sometimes you get illegal immigrants from. I highly doubt that if the immigrants looked white, blonde, and spoke English, that they could give it, that they would be upset.
And
you know,
I wouldn't be surprised if you're right at the moment. Obviously, in earlier days of history, there was a lot of backlash against immigration from various places in Europe.
The backlash was always because you've got to remember that if you go back to how Europe was a country that, you know, people from each country are very, you know, they didn't mingle that much. I mean, you know, it's not like immigration even from one country to another was that accepted. And especially you've got groups that came in that spoke a different language, had a different religion, and that's really what drove most of the problems. I mean, I read a book about immigration into the Pittsburgh area, you know, during the 1800s and early 1900s that populated the steel mills. And, you know, the Poles and the Germans and the Italians and all those groups really were, you know, the older groups that are there were very racist and very, you know, put great restrictions and complained about the new groups. Why don't they speak any English? Why won't they integrate? The same bullshit that you hear out in Arizona. I mean, I sort of got, you could just take it and you could just replace the ethnic groups between one and the other, and it's the same fucking thing 100 years ago. Okay? Yeah. So, you know.
The people who are on the side of this bill, I mean, they point out, you know, there have been problems with a lot of illegal immigration, there are gangs, there are other things like that. The problem is this kind of thing, and they say that this bill is, you know, of course we're going to fight it, we're going to enforce the law, blah, blah, blah. The problem is that it's so overbroad and untargeted. And of course, they say, you know, okay, the police officers will have to have a reasonable suspicion that...
And they're going to receive some training, I said. So what does a training entail? What?
Yeah, what exactly does an illegal immigrant look like?
What is the illegal immigrant activity that they are going to be targeting?
Yes. and as you mentioned, I guess, this clearly has a lot of things... At least potentially raises constitutional issues, and so this will undoubtedly be in the courts immediately and for a decent length of time. You know, because of course things take a while to go through the system, but whether or not it is constitutional in any way, shape, or form, it's just plain bad policy. Now, and I'm not necessarily, you know, I'm not necessarily saying I'm not wanting to enforce some sort of set of immigration laws and actually be a stickler about following a reasonable legal process. But on the other hand, I don't want a solution which involves basically being absolutely anybody to potentially be asked to prove their citizenship at a moment's notice. 'Cause
that's
then
right.
Every single one of us is going to have to carry around our passports at all times.
Yes. And it's not, you know, our constitution does not demand people to even have a passport. Okay. I mean, our constitution doesn't demand anybody to have any such proof of their citizenship on them, for heaven's sakes. And that's why I say this fucking law is just fucking bullshit. It is bullshit, okay? And, you know, it is just a product of a whole bunch of fucking racist people who, I don't know, you know, I don't know, you know, I live very close to an immigrant area. My brother does, you know, we don't fucking see the problem. Most of these people, I'm sorry. It's my opinion. It's purely racial. It's fucking racist. It's bullshit. Okay.
Okay. And, on that, let's take a break and move on to another topic. Unless you have more to say, Vaughn.
No, not really.
Okay, we will be right back after this exciting message.
This is a break, oh yes, this is a break. This is a break, cause no one gave me any suggestions. I told you, I warned you, so this is a break. This is a wonderful break, a wonderful break. Yes, indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yes, this is a break. Yes, yes, this is a break, 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 break. Yes, 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 this is a break. Yes, this is a break, 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 break. Yes, it is a break. And now, and now, and now, and now the break is over.
Okay, we are back. Next on the list, the financial reform efforts. I know this has been going back and forth, and it looks like, you know, Republicans are actually making noises about trying to find a compromise that they can support. What's your take on what's going on right now, Yvonne?
Well, I don't know. A lot of the stuff which this week, you know, I don't know. The legislation has been going back and forth, and some people have been complaining that it's missing certain elements, okay? One of the elements that I heard, a chief complaint, was that it is – even though – they are proposing to try to take derivatives out of non-markets and try to bring it into market-traded derivatives, okay? But there is a big loophole in it that says that there can be certain specific contracts that can be done outside of a market, okay? If it's some kind of a custom contract and whatever, and some people say that you could drive a frickin' truck through that loophole. But on other instances, some of the other things, I think that, you know, people are in agreement in terms of regulation, oversight. You know, some people don't like the Consumer Protection Agency. But the one thing is that I think that even though some people were saying that this week that the reason why the Justice Department came out with a Goldman prosecution was in order to try to push this reform, I actually think that a lot of people on the right, because I've actually heard them, okay, one of the guys who's always, like, anti all this stuff was Larry Kudlow on CNBC. He actually, you know, was enraged at that conduct and believes that some financial regulation, I guess, needs to take place. Whereas before, I saw him, like, totally on the opposite side of it. So I think that some of these shenanigans coming out and being public, I think it's pushing people towards looking to the fact that, yeah, we do definitely need some financial regulation, where it moved people off the fence more towards financial regulation than before. I think that that's what I'm seeing right now. You know, I mean, I don't see any change in there that right now the change that I would like is I want to make sure that the derivatives, they all get moved to a market. I don't want this loophole where, yeah, some of them are, but no, some of them aren't, you know. If you're going to create these contracts, I think these contracts have to be on a marketplace with regulations where you have to be funded, where you have to have capital behind it, where if you, at the end of the trading day, you don't have enough capital to cover your positions, you have to come up with a capital as a margin call. That's what happens right now in all the futures exchanges and options exchanges and every other financial market. Damn it, we have to have the same thing for derivatives. I don't think that we can have that different. I mean, you know, it's just, you need that transparency out there in order to make sure that we, you know, you don't have an AIG once again with that kind of a position held in derivatives that could basically bankrupt the economy.
So two things on that. One, and I'll just say this and pass over. I still remain skeptical about whether some of these things should be allowed at all. You know, not just put on a market, but whether they're really healthy things at all. But leaving that aside, the other issue here is on sort of the how people react exactly with too big to fail. Like, you know, I guess what's in the current proposals is basically...
It's not very good.
Okay, so tell us about it and what's wrong with it.
Well, the one thing is that they didn't put any restrictions on terms of a size of an institution. All they put in was really a mechanism to try to dispose of institutions that fail that are very large. That's what they did.
And what they have in there might even be inadequate yet for the failure of the biggest ones out there right now.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the problem. That's the one thing that I don't see. I think that at some point there's got to be a certain way that if a certain institution exceeds a certain percentage of
GDP,
say,
or something like that.
Or deposits or the banking system or whatever, that, you know what, either they have to get to a point where they have to sell some of those assets, they have to break them up, they have to make it into two institutions, they would have to split off some of their assets, because I don't see any other way of actually reducing that risk, you know? I mean,
it seems fundamental, though. The problem is that if you put together any sort of thing that was sort of, you know, a hard and fixed cap of some sort. And you could even make it a hard and fixed cap that right now was bigger than any existing company and, like, slowly reduced over the next 20 years or something like that.
Right,
The problem is, you know, any one of those companies who's near that boundary would... None of them want to do this because it reduces their level of control. Now, having said that, from a shareholder's perspective, it probably ain't a bad thing at all. I mean, the history of it is every time there's been one of these big, massive breakups, you know, U.S. Steel, Standard Oil, AT&T, all of those kinds of stuff, the people who were shareholders before
made,
the breakup...
Made like a bat out of hell.
Who actually held on to all the pieces. Oh, yeah, made out great.
I didn't bring up that example, you know, but you read my mind. That's exactly what I was thinking. Standard Oil. I mean, the Standard Oil breakup was very beneficial for most shareholders. So I will tell you that I think that these mega massive institutions that were created, it's just bad. I mean, the worst of it, honestly, if it's focused on certain areas, it's okay. I will say that. I mean, you compare J.P. Morgan Chase to Citigroup. Citigroup was a mishmash of so many fucking companies doing all sorts of different businesses, which many had nothing to do one with another, that you're like, how in the world do you manage this crazy hodgepodge? Okay.
Well, you could make that argument for conglomerates in general. I mean,
that's why almost all conglomerates went the way of the dodo 30 years ago. Most of the big ones did. I mean, no. You know, the big ones were like Gulf and Western, for example. Used to own Paramount. This, ITT, for example, used to own 300 companies. Those all went the way of the dodo. They were not very efficient. I mean, you know, you can't consider a General Electric such a conglomerate. General Electric has about 7 or 8 lines of business, okay? There may be enormous lines of business, but there are not that many of them, okay? You know, main lines of business. I think that it's just, you know, I mean, there were some assets every time I heard about Citigroup that I was like, shit, man, they owned that too? And then they owned this? And I'm like, when in the world did they buy all this junk? You know, it just always never surprised me all of a sudden the subsidiaries that I would hear that Citigroup owned. So I don't know, and there were businesses that were, you know, one of them I still remember. I was shocked. It's called Primerica, okay, which I think they managed to divest, but I can't remember. Primerica was basically a fucking boiler room operation to sell insurance, and it was owned by Citigroup. And I'm like thinking, why the hell would Citigroup own a fucking boiler room? I mean, you tell me, you know, but they owned it. they own some other crazy oil trading company, okay, which I never heard of, that their top trader, that was a big mess with, what's his name, the Pazar, because their top trader at that oil subsidiary, which nobody had ever heard of, was scheduled to make $100 million. And you're like, wait. I'm like, and I kept going, who the hell could make $100 million? And then you find it was this obscure oil trading subsidiary where this guy was the head of it, and he had this compensation scheme that, based on it, they had made so much money in the oil trading that he was due $100 million. But
not,
I'm like,
not bad to be him.
Not bad to be him, I must agree. But it was just like, but you know, you're like, Citigroup is also in the oil trading business, and it's a separate subsidiary. It's not like it's under their Citigroup Financial, whatever. No, it's some separate subsidiary that is just out there doing that.
Well, and I think what's going to – just to wrap this up, I mean, I think we're going to see the same kind of things here that we saw with healthcare, although it is remarkable that the Republicans seem to at least be engaging on this one rather than just going no, no, no. But I think they found it hard to politically be the ones saying – no, you shouldn't regulate Wall Street. Let them do what they want. But I think what you're going to end up here is you're going to get something that's, you know, does some nominal reforms, but doesn't really change anything that substantial. I mean, like you said, I don't think there are going to be any rules coming out of this that say, hey, if you're too big to fail, you can't exist, you get broken up. There's not going to be anything like that.
Well, I think, one person came up with something, and and said pretty much that we should bring back Glass-Steagall.
A lot of people have said that, but there's no political backing to support it.
I don't know if there isn't. I will tell you one thing. We had a much healthier financial system before this, and there's a reason why we had it.
For anyone who doesn't know, this is the law that separated investment banking from personal banking and such.
And there was a reason why it existed, because of the Depression, they decided to separate the banks, but they could also – banks could not be owned, say – because right now a bank could be owned by an industrial corporation as well, for example. Mm-hmm. And the reason why they separated them was because in order to avoid this kind of shit that's happened the last 10 years. So,
also, until relatively more than 10 years ago, but relatively recently, there were also limits on, you know, how many states banks could be in and things like that, you know.
Yeah.
And there were a much bigger concentration on, you know, if you went and got a bank account, it was with, you know, your local bank that had a few dozen branches across your part of the state.
With which, who you knew the manager, if you were a business person. I remember that shit. I mean, one of the great things, I had a small bank like that. The branch manager knew us. It wasn't like I had to go and, like, prove, like, my lifeblood to this guy. So he knew the kind of business we were in. In order to get a loan or to do any transaction, it was a bazillion times easier than it is with these mega conglomerates.
Yep. And like I said, I don't think any of that's going to change. We're not going, you know, they're not going to roll back anything substantive. There'll be a few things here, a few things there. Will it make it better than it is today? Maybe some, but nothing substantial where you're really going to say, oh yeah, it's a whole different universe.
I think that there are going to be some things that will be substantial, but we'll see yet still which ones they are. Okay. All right.
I don't think they're going to come up with anything that, you know, the folks in the industry won't be able to figure out a way around in a year.
I don't know about that. I think that if we do the thing that the derivatives change the right way, I think that that will be major. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
We'll see. Time for another break, and we will come back with our – it was going to be our third topic, but we sort of squeezed in another one, so our fourth topic. We'll be right back.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by Notel Motel.
Conflicted by Rob McDonald. Important people deliver important speeches with their flies wide open. Babies lose balance and fall in hilarious ways. A palm tree falls through a palm reader's roof. I am reacting, probably incorrectly.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
Okay, we are back, and next on the agenda, there were a number of sort of, well,
specific- I guess we you know, we didn't talk about the iPhone leak last week, did we? Because I don't think that at the time we were sure it was real.
Well, I think the majority of this story happened over the course of the week since last time we recorded.
Right.
Basically, Gizmodo came out saying, hey, we got the new iPhone. It's in our hands. Here's some pictures. We'll tear it up. We'll break it down. We'll show it to you.
I thought it was bullshit because they've spent so many times before where I've heard this. And I was like, oh, come on. No way.
So then they published the story about this, too. And basically their story is that an Apple engineer was carrying this thing around in disguise. So it had like a case on it that made it look like an iPhone 3GS.
Yep.
And he was
celebrating his birthday.
He was celebrating his birthday at a bar. He left it there. And some random person found it. And there's a level of indirection here. I forget the details. But anyway, that person made some very weak attempts to try to find the owner and then realized, oh, this looks interesting. And ended up selling it to Gizmodo for $5,000.
Yep.
And so there are a number of interesting aspects to this story. One is, of course, the phone itself has some interesting things, front-facing camera, stuff like that, you know, blah, blah, blah. I guess we'll talk about all of those in good time. But also just the fact that the way that this came into Gizmodo's possession is apparently not legal.
Well, why is it not? I mean...
So, basically,
okay, say you find a phone on the street, I mean, and say, you know, I don't know, maybe it's locked or something, I don't know. Apparently it wasn't, because I think, you know, so what do you do if you can't find the owner? What do you do?
So, the part of this comes into sort of how you go about finding the owner and stuff, and specifics of California law. You know, we should have asked Greg to join us again this time for in his lawyer capacity. But anyway, there are a couple things. First of all, according to California state law, apparently in the sort of finders keepers thing, it doesn't become yours until 3 years or so after you found it, and you actually do have to do a due
diligence. 3 years,
and you have to do due diligence. And I guess technically, you're actually supposed to, in that case, report the missing item to the police if it's worth more than a certain amount of money, which in this case, the phone was. But at the very least, you're supposed to it's sort of standard procedure in these kinds of things is you return it to the place of business where you found it. Because the guy who lost it kept calling
probably
that bar back over
right.
and over. Did somebody find a phone? Did somebody find a phone?
Find a phone?
You know, and so the guy says when he first found the phone, he messed around with it a little bit. It had Facebook on it. He went in Facebook. He had the guy's name.
So he could have sent him a message right there on Facebook saying, hey, I found your phone,
dude. Could have done that. He had the guy's name. He could have contacted this guy through any number of means. Apparently, once he discovered that, he thought, oh, this looks like an Apple prototype of some sort. He tried to call the local Apple store to report a, you know, found iPhone prototype. And of course, the Apple store didn't know what the hell to do with that.
He said, oh, what the fuck? Are you drugs? Click.
He tried to call the main Apple switchboard. I think he called the Apple support line. Things like that. But, like, he didn't, as far as I know, try to actually contact this particular engineer to report it. And anyway...
maybe the guy wasn't that smart.
From all reports, you know, he basically made a couple of little attempts here and there, but he didn't do any of the normal things that you would expect someone to do when they found a piece of lost property and they were trying to return it. And then, even regardless of all that, the selling it becomes another... if he'd kept the damn thing for himself, he'd still not be on very good grounds. But when he sold it for $5,000, then then both him and the people buying it at Gizmodo are getting into even sketchier grounds. You know, in terms of this, and who knows if they'll bother prosecuting any of this. Apparently, the DA is looking into it, but I don't know how much it's worth their while. Apparently, the engineer is actually still working at Apple. He wasn't fired, at least not yet.
I know that Steve Wozniak was put on a T-shirt. He was drinking a beer, and it said something that I spent a birthday with the name of the engineer escapes me right now. Gary, Gary something.
Whatever.
Oh, here it is. I went drinking with Gary Powell, and all I got was a lousy iPhone prototype. There you go.
And he's
in a picture with a phone.
Which actually brings up another thing, and this is actually an important point. I actually don't have a huge problem, regardless of what the California state law is, on Gizmodo doing almost everything they did. I mean, that's their job, is to do tech reporting.
And I agree.
If they could get a hand on this prototype and pay a few bucks to get it and examine it, they had the scoop of the year. And they produced good information that the people who read their site are salivating for. So they actually did their job. And I kind of look at that in the same lines as, a newspaper that reports...
Paying a source.
Not necessarily paying a source, but like reporting on some sort of classified report that is classified but is a cover-up of something that... you know, maybe shouldn't really be classified or has news value that, you know, or whatever, you know, and it may be breaking the law, but it's bringing information to light that's useful to the public at large. But where Gizmodo were dicks is using this guy's name in the report, the guy who lost the phone.
Like they did. They actually did post this name. I didn't realize that they did. I thought they avoided that.
No. They did not avoid that at all. And thus the T-shirt with Woz. What they did is on the post where he said, "We're going to tell you this story." They're like, "This Apple engineer named Gary Powell went out drinking, got drunk, and left his phone."
Oh boy!
You know, and stuff like that.
Out
like
loud.
They could.
You know, they could have spared the poor guy.
They could.
You know, they know that the guy didn't do it on purpose.
Well, and they could have told this entire story and made it just as interesting,
without
not giving the guy's name out. Now, Apple obviously already knew.
Okay.
But now this guy is all over the internet. You know, his from now on at any future. You know,
employer or anywhere, he'll be, hey, you're the guy that lost the phone. Well, we better make sure we strap him onto you from now on, do we? Oh, boy.
Exactly.
Crying out loud.
You know? And so this guy's basically, okay, by the time this got to Gizmodo, you gotta know this guy had already been through hell.
Oh, man.
Because he had to report that he lost this thing. He's afraid he's about to get fired. He's going through the channels. You know how secretive Apple is. And, you know, he might have gotten brought into Steve Jobs himself to get spanked. I don't know. You know, and it's miraculous that he's still there. Because apparently there's another story, and there is a difference here. You mentioned Wozniak. A picture came out on the day the iPads were released.
Mm-hmm.
That showed, you know, Woz in line to get his iPad. Actually, it was a little bit before that. Like, on the day the iPads were coming out, just after midnight, Woz was, I guess it was when he was in line. I forget the details. But anyway, there was an Apple engineer who worked on the iPad team,
mm-hmm.
Who showed Woz an iPad. Before you could actually pick them up, but on release day. And it was the 3G version, which is not out yet even today.
Okay. Well, it was an announced product.
Wozniak, there was a picture of Wozniak holding this thing that got out and was, you know, on all the gadget sites and everywhere else. That engineer, who apparently had permission to talk about things once it was release day, that engineer did get fired. And, you know,
but what did he get fired for?
Well, because he showed an unreleased, you know, it wasn't the iPad that was being released that day. It was a few hours before even the iPad that was being released that day was actually available. He showed the iPad 3G to someone who was not authorized to see it. And unlike the guy who lost his phone in the bar, it was on purpose.
Wozniak is still an Apple employee.
He is an employee, and Woz said on when he posted about this that, you know, he thought that it was probably okay because he was an Apple employee, and he didn't even realize at the time that the one he was being shown was the 3G and not the base unit. And, you know, but he wasn't in the list of people authorized to see it because it's not just any old Apple employee is allowed to see pre-release products. And you'd think Woz isn't just any authorized employee, but he's not in those loops anymore. Right. And he apparently even called up Steve Jobs and talked to him about this guy and was like, I hope he didn't get into trouble. Guy was sacked anyway. And the difference being that, you know, again, the engineer at the bar made a mistake. You know, he left it. He didn't mean to do it. The engineer who showed Woz was consciously showing him something when he wasn't supposed to. Now, who knows? The other engineer may yet be fired. I don't know. But Apple takes these things seriously. But, you know, again, I don't know. Overall, I think Gizmodo did what a news site is supposed to do. And if one of their reporters ends up, you know, doing some community service hours or something for it, well, you know, that's the price of journalism. Or even going to jail, I guess. But at the same time, you didn't have to use the guy's name. That's just a complete asshole dick move, you know?
Well, I will tell you that having worked at a major technology company, I mean, I agree with the thing about using his name, but the one thing about not talking about stuff before it's released or whatever, I mean, that's very important, not just that. At Apple, okay. Yeah. I'm sorry, but you know, I they get a lot more flack because there's a lot more people trying to pry to look at their products, okay, and look at their stuff. But you know, a couple of years ago, there was a big fiasco with some secrecy with some stuff that at HP. What the fuck I can say at HP that was leaked, and a few people got fired over this shit. Okay, you know, believe me, it's not just an Apple thing. I mean, you know. It was very important not to be talking and pre-announcing a whole bunch of stuff. And, I mean, I got to be honest. I mean, I was privy to a lot of information prior to it being publicly announced, to which I just avoided anything that had to do with any press at all. And if anybody from the press ever asked me something, I talked only about stuff that's public or referred them to, you know, something else. Exactly. But, you know, I would completely avoid any such type of communication because I will tell you that if one of us went and, like, blabbed something that we shouldn't have in the wrong situation with the press, would have been fired. Well,
and I make a point of not actively saying who I am employed by. And even within that, I mean, I too know things that aren't public. And if I started blabbing about them on this podcast, then goddammit, I deserve to be fired.
Exactly. So this is not – I think that people jump all over Apple. The problem is that Apple has two things that are going against it. One is that the element of surprise and the fact that you don't show these products in advance is something that is part of the entire marketing of the company. I mean, I'm sorry, but right now the fact that a 4G iPhone leaked out and that some of the features are now public – that affects sales.
Yeah.
How many people right now are not going to go fucking buy an iPhone 3G because they saw right now that there's a brand new one about to come out? I'll tell you that I am.
True. I mean, of course, you know, I mean, most definitely. However, Apple's iPhone releases have been on a fairly predictable schedule. So if you were thinking about buying one
I agreed that they come on a predictable schedule. But I'll tell you something right now that I wouldn't have considered. I thought maybe they'd come out with some stupid bullshit or whatever. The fact that I saw that stupid forward-facing camera, that's one thing right now that I'm like right now, well, why the fuck am I going to buy one of them right now?
Yeah.
I mean, this is something that seriously affects the bottom line of a company right now. Now you're Apple. Now what you're having to do right now? You're having to scramble to release this thing as soon as possible.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's pretty clear and has been there. These things, it'll be out in the middle of the summer.
But I got to guarantee you something, that I think that they're probably going to release it even earlier than that because of the stupid...
They'll release it when it's ready. I hear what you're saying.
But they're going to have to put... right now, I will tell you something, that if it's me, I'm fucking pushing to put this on overdrive right now if it wasn't already. Because this is not good for business right now. Now I've got a fucking lame duck product line sitting out there because somebody leaked this thing.
Okay, but you know, look, you look at the, I guess it's not quite as, basically they release them every June or July. You know,
I know, but I will tell you something, that last year I bought an iPhone 3G before the 3GS came out. 1 month before, even though I figured that maybe in June a new one was come out. You know why?
Because you didn't think there'd be anything exciting.
Exactly.
Yeah, I can see that.
Okay, that's why. So, right now, I was thinking of buying another one for my nephew. I'm telling you right now, I am not buying one. I'm waiting, now that I saw the prototype.
Okay. With that, let's take a break, and we'll come back with a couple more things to wrap up today's show.
Tag yourself with Blue Protection. La 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 la. Take the time for vaccination. La 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 la. Take action every day to help you. La la la.
For the most accurate health information, visit www.cdc.gov or call 1-800-CDC-INFO 24/7.
Okay, we are back. So, riffing off the Apple stuff, Yvonne, you wanted to talk a little bit about how big Apple's getting.
Well, the one thing is that this week, okay, I know that we've talked about Apple ad nauseum, but the one thing that happened this week was that S&P sent the press release announcing that Apple's market capitalization right now had allowed it to eclipse Microsoft to become the number two company in the world in market value behind ExxonMobil. Yes, that is correct. Okay. But Microsoft came back out with a press release straight afterwards, which I actually agree, saying that S&P was incorrect.
Okay.
Because the reason why they're incorrect is because they are not counting in that market cap the stock that is held by Bill Gates and, you know, Steve Ballmer. And if you add that, then Microsoft is still about $30 billion larger than Microsoft.
Which is what, percentage-wise?
It's about 8%.
So now, another two or three trading days. And
yeah. Now, now I will say that given the current trend right now, it is inevitable that over the next year that Apple will wind up overtaking Microsoft in market cap. I mean, I don't see how it won't. Now, you know, that is, you know, that's why this week I was poking fun a little bit on my Facebook post, where I was just I reposted Michael Dell's famous words about 10 years ago, where he was asked what he, you know, after Steve Jobs came back to Apple, what he would do with Apple, and he said that he would close the company and return the money to the stockholders. And right now, Apple is so big that they could buy out Dell in cash. Okay. They wouldn't have to borrow a dime. They could just write a check and buy him out. Okay? So, I mean, I'm just, you know, it is very stunning how things have changed in those, in that time frame. And I'll tell you this, that, you know, Apple reported last quarter $3 billion net, you know, after taxes and everything, about $4 billion in operating profit. Now, here's a difference between the business model that Apple has been building versus the one Microsoft did, you know, that made them so much money over the years. I mean, and Microsoft's still making more money than Apple, but that gap's been closing quite rapidly. You know, because Apple derives so much aftermarket revenue after each device is sold. That is why that – I mean, I just counted how much I spent on the iTunes store. It exists. I mean, it's a couple of $1,000 I spent at the iTunes store. I mean, it's not like before where you would buy from Microsoft. You bought Windows and, you know, maybe you bought Office and whatever and some support. But, you know, they didn't have you on hook every couple of days getting $10 here, $5 there, $10 here, $5 there.
I know. I mean, this – most of my media purchases have gone elsewhere, but like on my iPhone, every time I'm bored, I surf the App Store looking for something else I can buy. To kill a few minutes. So
And there's a cut for Apple here and a cut for Apple there. Now this business model, don't get me wrong, this business model, Apple didn't invent this business model. This was the Nintendo business model. Nintendo, when they sold software, their cartridges, that is how they made money. Okay, Nintendo had on every cartridge, if you developed a game, you had to give it to Nintendo so they would make the cartridge and they got a fee on every cartridge sold. Sony had the same licensing scheme for you to sell on PlayStation games. This was not an invention of Apple. Apple just went and just, you know, like with everything that Apple's done, they just repackaged it and changed it, made it more convenient, and wham, I put it out there. And now they're making more money on it. You know, the fact that that revenue stream with so many damn iPhones and so many devices going out and out and out, that revenue stream just keeps growing like a freaking gusher. I mean, and you know, at first maybe it wasn't that much profitable, but when last quarter Apple sold through the store, through the iTunes and iPhone store, over $1 billion in one quarter, okay? So you're talking about a rate that's going right now through $4 billion a year. You keep adding to that through, you know, with so many more phones being sold out there, iPads and shit, and the rumor that I think you mentioned that apparently that they're going to come out with an app store itself for the Mac as well.
Yeah, although the rumor said that they would only allow apps on that that way. Somebody sent an email to Steve Jobs saying, is this stuff true? And he responded in his typical...
No.
Yeah, he basically just said no. Now, no. I think they'd be crazy not to invest in some kind of app store, but they'd also be crazy if they made that the only way to do desktop software.
Yeah, because a PC is a different device. And I mean, you know, the people who use it, that's a very different... that's a very different user base, you know, that what they're targeting with the other devices.
And
so, yeah,
I'll tell you, fundamentally, though, if they came out with that... The only apps that I would buy not through it are the ones that they rejected and I wanted anyway.
Right.
I'm guessing, like, for instance, they might not be hot on, BitTorrent clients or something like that.
Right.
But you know, for everything else, I'm actually looking at the software that is running on my machine at this very moment while we record is Mail from Apple. iChat from Apple, iTunes from Apple, some webcam software that is not from Apple, Safari from Apple, iPhoto from Apple, iCal from Apple, iMovie from Apple, Skype not from Apple, a printer queue for my printer, which is not technically from Apple, but is distributed through Apple.
Right.
And that's what I'm running right now. I mean, 80% of what I'm running on my iMac right now is actually from Apple.
We're pathetic Apple pawns. That's all we've become. My God.
Having said that, I've got lots of other programs on here that I use on a regular basis that are not from Apple. But if they were available through an Apple App Store, I'd buy it through there rather than going and buying my software somewhere else. Absolutely. Listen,
But for full disclosure, let me, because I don't think I've said this before, I do own a significant number of Apple shares. Okay, all right. So I better bring that up.
I think I own like one, maybe two.
Well, I own a whole lot more than that. I don't own as many as I used to, but I certainly, you know, which is one of the reasons why, fortunately, I've been able to recover from the tailspin that was the destruction of the stock market 2 years ago. Thankfully, you know, that actually was a significant saving grace. But yes, so yes, when I am talking about this, I am not just, you know, interested from a technology standpoint. I also financially have benefited significantly from Apple's rise.
Yeah, so everybody go out and buy their Macs now.
Yes, please. Thank you very much.
And
okay.
Buy lots of stuff from the Apple Store.
Just knock yourself out. Okay. All right. So anyway,
There was also that guy who got shut down when he was buying and reselling iPads. They told him he had reached his lifetime limit of iPads, and they wouldn't sell them anymore.
No. Yeah. Well.
Anyway,
okay.
we should close down just for reference, and this might be an interesting thing to do sometimes. The things that we potentially had on our list that we did not talk about today: the UK elections,
yep.
The censoring of South Park,
yep.
The apparently South Korean boat that was sunk by a North Korean torpedo recently.
Yep.
And that's it this time. So
that's it.
Anyway, yep. Thanks, and sorry we didn't talk about those things. If you really, really care about any of those things, email us and ask us to talk about them. But that's it for this week. As usual, if there are any comments, thoughts, questions, suggested topics, anything, email me at ablesme@ablesme.com. That's ABULSME. I will relay things to Yvonne as appropriate. And, of course, tell your friends. We like more listeners. Everybody should listen. Everybody. Anyway, that's it.
Everybody.
Everybody. Thank you. Goodbye. And talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.